irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Get Yourself the Job with Jennifer Hill, only on LA Talk Radio.
Well, happy Monday, everybody, and thank you so much for tuning in to Get Yourself the Job with Jennifer Hill. Today, I'm excited to have with us on the show Marion McGovern. Marion is author of Thriving in the Gig Economy and is also the co-founder and former CEO of M Squared Consulting, one of the first gig economy talent intermediaries to thrive before the term was even coined. She is also the founder of Collabris, a company focused on independent contractor compliance. With a tremendous career in the human capital space and with a virtual specialty in employment law, Ms. McGovern taught in the prestigious School of Management at the University of San Francisco for 7 years. With 25 years of work in peer exchange groups, Ms. McGovern is director at the Alliance of CEOs and sits on several private company and nonprofit boards while actively mentoring entrepreneurs. Thank you so much for joining us today, Marion.
My pleasure, Jennifer.
Yeah, so you have quite an impressive background. And before we get into how you specialized in gig economy, I'd like to diverge for a moment a little bit about what you and I were talking about offline before we got on air. Tell me a little bit about this program or this class that you're looking at possibly putting together for a university out there on gig economy and what that means for the future.
Well, it is a fascinating challenge that educators have when you look at how the pace of change in business is speeding up so much right now. And, you know, people are concerned about jobs getting away, going away through automation, et cetera, but it's not that the jobs will go away, it's that there will be new tasks, that the work will be different because it will be aided in some way with, you know, automation, et cetera. And then there are new work styles like the gig world, for example. So how do you, as an educator, prepare students for work and roles that really haven't been defined yet? So I've had fascinating discussions with the senior leadership of a university here in Northern California about developing programs that would help people be more prepared for working in this new world of work. So developing more adaptive skills, if you will, more critical thinking, bringing design thinking into how you think about your career. It's an exciting topic.
It really is. That's why when I got your press release, I think it was several months ago that your publicist had sent it to me, it was a topic that I feel like has been on the forefront of people's minds for quite a while now. And moving into 2018, I think has become an even more important topic, as you said, because of some of the changes with automation that we're anticipating. So tell our listeners a little bit about how did this become a passion project for you? How did you become an expert before it was even really a coined term?
Well, you know, way back when, I was a consultant with the large management consulting firm of Booz Allen and Hamilton, and I saw situations where they didn't really need the team of smart MBAs to come in and do something for them. What they really needed was one person who had done this before, and that was a thought I couldn't get out of my mind, and so, like a good little consultant, I surveyed the marketplace and I surveyed individuals and said, you know, this is the idea. If I could bring together independent professionals, because I realized that so many people were leaving consulting. You know, they didn't want to live on planes anymore, or the lifestyle was just too hard, but they were doing it on their own. So if you could bring together those independents with the companies who had the projects, was there a business there? And this was back in 1987, actually, and I got a resounding maybe from both sides, where the company said, you know, if you really could find that, maybe I would do it. And the people said, if you really could find me interesting work, maybe I would do it. So with the true optimism that any entrepreneur has to have, I took those maybes and ran with it.
That's great. And so that's when you created your own company. And then as we discussed, so you had your own company for many years, you sold it, and then you've now served on, or you serve on a board in that industry still, or for your old company?
No, I ended up selling my, grew the company, you know, through all of this, certainly the early introduction period of a new concept. So as someone once said, you know, when you're an innovator, you often have kind of the arrows in your back if you're running forward. We had all of that. But sold it to a South African conglomerate that interestingly had a company just like mine. It was kind of like a parallel universe in Johannesburg and Cape Town, where I had been a Booz Allen person. The person that started that one had been a Capgemini person. So the same sort of foundation about being a consulting option as opposed to a staffing option. You know, there always was sort of a confusion, were we a staffing company, a search company, or a consulting company? And in truth of the matter was, we were a hybrid of all three. So I remained on that board until 2014 when the South Africans sold it. But again, I've just been in this human capital space for so long, and around the time that I left the board, I was approached by three different investment groups, two private equity groups and a venture capitalist, about the digital talent platforms they were thinking about. And they were quite different. One was a platform for professional women who had left the workforce to become parents. Another one was for oil field services workers in Eastern Africa. And a third was actual hires, was entry-level hires of liberal arts kind of college students that would be something that everybody could, every corporation in America could use, and thereby get rid of kind of the HR recruiters that do that work. So it was fascinating to me to have these individuals who typically deal in technology startups only, looking at service businesses, but not as a service business and not as a human capital company, but as a technology company. And working very hard to figure out how to eliminate the expensive component of people in the process. And as someone who believes that people are the most important part of any enterprise, I just became really curious about this whole digital talent world. So that was part of the reason why I wrote another book, and Thriving in the Gig Economy was the result.
That's amazing. It's funny, too. You forget about all of these amazing resources out there. Some people, when they hear gig economy, might think things like Uber or Lyft, but then there's websites like Fiverr or Upwork. I just used Upwork this weekend to help somebody proof me from a white paper standpoint, because I knew nothing about writing a white paper and had to write one from scratch. And it was wonderful to be able to collaborate and find resources of people who had written them online and could help edit for content the way the paper was meant to be written. And it's great because it's a win-win for both parties. You can find, on the one hand, somebody who needs employment, on the other hand, somebody who needs expert advice. And I think that we're moving more in that direction. Would you agree?
There are hundreds of them. There are ones that specialize in coaches, tutors, makeup artists. Heck, there's the one at glam.com is down where you are. You know, I'm in Northern California or Southern California, where if you're going to do a movie, you need makeup artists, you can get them from there. But if you're just going to a fancy fundraiser, you could have a makeup artist come to your house and make you look beautiful. So
I'm doing that this weekend. On Saturday, my glam squad is booked to come and do my hair and makeup. So I'm with you. It's one
there
of my
you go. There you go. They're not here yet. I would love that. But there's a digital platform being developed for snowplow drivers. I mean, all sorts of things. And at the sort of the very credentialed side of the spectrum, there is one that is just for data scientists. And, you know, they probably have the highest billing rate of any of the platforms out there, but you have to have a certain Kaggle score. A Kaggle score is a way that these big data scientist guys sort of have a competition and solve very complex problems. And
wow.
Their score is the answer that they came up with. And if your score isn't high enough, you don't get in.
That's extraordinary. And this is a new platform you said that was just released. I mean, it's so funny because you think when you hear gig economy, you just think very small picture like we were talking about. And then Glam Squad, I would have never even thought of that as being part of the gig economy. But clearly, now that you put it in perspective, it is. And like you said, more and more jobs are kind of moving that direction. Is at the click of a button, you can just have somebody at your doorstep to do whatever you need.
Yes, I actually kind of look upon it as there are three universes that people often assume are the same, but they are not.
Okay.
So one is the on-demand side of things. On-demand, of course, being the driver, the delivery person. You know, you want that person immediately. You don't really care who they are. I mean, maybe you want to make sure your driver is actually a good driver, but that's sort of up to Uber and Lyft. But you don't care who delivers your, you know, your takeout food or whatever. But then as you go sort of higher up the expertise pyramid, if you will, you get into personal service people, electricians, they might be called small business owners, independent professionals. You know, I got my videographer through Thumbtack, for example. And then you get up, and there, you know, you might want to actually talk to the person first to decide, do I really want that guy to be my videographer? And then when you get sort of to the higher end where you're actually doing consultants and web designers and you know, marketing people, who knows? You know, I have somebody doing all sorts of Google AdWords stuff with my website right now. You know, I definitely wanted to talk to them about that project, how they would approach it, what the outcomes would be, all that kind of stuff. So there's a higher level of interaction that the client, the buyer would want to have, sort of the more expertise you're purchasing than, you know, when you're down at that on-demand, I want them tomorrow. Or I want them tomorrow, I want them this minute. You know, it actually might be a little disconcerting if I asked for a digital marketing person and they showed up in a minute.
That's great. So to your point, I mean, there are so many, so you were saying there are the three main platforms. So you were saying the first one is kind of the immediate, get me this now, Instacart sort of a thing, to the specialized service. And then what did you say the third universe was, just so I'm clear on that?
Well, actually, the third universe, you're keeping me honest, I left that out, is the sharing world. So the sharing economy. I actually don't consider the sharing economy the gig economy. So the Airbnbs of the world. I know it takes work to be a host, but I am not getting that condo in Colorado because you're a great host. I'm getting it because you have the right number of bedrooms, it's near the lifts, and it's available when I want it. So
true.
For me, the gig world, gigs by definition are work. It's work of uncertain duration for multiple employers or clients. So a gig is work. Airbnb to me is sharing. So I think when people combine it, what they're combining is the fact that it is non-employment income. And they're looking upon this as it's all gigs because it's income that doesn't come from employment. So I don't look at it that way. But some people, some journalists, et cetera, often do look at it that way.
Yeah, it sounds like they collapse the two. So tell me, with all these different gig, these three universes, including the sharing universe that you just referred to, what are a couple of things to anticipate change-wise that we might be seeing in 2018 when it comes to the true gig economies?
Well, you know, there are developments in it all the time. You know, one of the issues that, of course, comes up is about the social safety net for gig workers. So this is the fact that since they're not associated with an employer per se, they don't have access to health insurance, pension benefits, etc. So if we peel that back just a little bit, first off, there are many different models for these gig economy platforms. So for example, I mentioned I am a regular user of Thumbtack, which provides personal service people from gardeners to electricians to videographers. Thumbtack does not employ anybody. Thumbtack is really a lead generation engine for independent workers. So if I put out that I want to have, you know, a videographer take my speech on a given day, I'll get three proposals. When I choose Dave, Dave ends up paying Thumbtack a fee because he got a gig through them. There's no employment issue there at all. So that's not even a question of whether they should be a contractor or not. That they're just getting leads. And there are firms that operate that way in the consulting world. There's a firm called Workhoppers in Canada where that's entirely how they're doing it, where, you know, companies subscribe to be able to search, and that's how they make their money. But they, you know, the worker and the company kind of find each other through the platform and work out their own deal. So that being said, the social safety net issue is still an issue when whether the person's an employee or whether the person's independently contracted through the platform or getting the gig through the platform with no other relationship. And part of that is just the history of sort of benefits in America, which was, I think people often think it's always been this way, but really it was in the 40s and the 50s when all of a sudden it was called the Treaty of Detroit when benefits became associated with employment. And so now there is a movement afoot to try to create portable benefits, meaning the benefits, your health insurance would travel with you. And different models have been suggested. So, for example, if I'm consulting and I'm doing Uber driving, you know, maybe a part of the fees that I would get from driving would go into some benefit fund and that would travel with me. So Senator Mark Warner actually proposed last year a portable benefits project or pilot project legislation to create a pilot project where they would test out how would these things work. And then by virtue of having this test, that could inform policy and then come up with a policy on this. So I think the whole portable benefits world, enough people are looking at it. There's another platform, Handy, that is like Thumbtack. It does, you know, electricians and plumbers and handymen and stuff. And they are working in the state of New York to come up with a benefits program where Handy, for example, could pay benefits to the workers, but that would not make them their employees. So revolves around the employment definitions, which is complicated and it's been a problem for a long time, but there's movement on it. People are talking about it now.
Yeah, it's funny because the minute you said that about the company in New York that was looking into potentially paying benefits but then not classifying them as employees, being the owner of a staffing for myself, it is something that you do get into very sticky, muddy ground on that because of all these legislations statewide and nationally about what defines somebody as being an employee. It's reassuring, though, to hear that there are companies out there and people trying to figure ways to ameliorate this so it's a win-win for everybody so that people can, like in your book title, thrive in a gig economy and at the same time still be able to get the necessities like benefits in order to support their families. So I think that sounds like a wonderful opportunity that's out there. On that note, is this a good time to look into switching from general regular employment to a gig economy sort of job?
I think it depends on your skill set and your kind of risk profile as well as your social profile. And I say that meaning the following. You know, first, three questions anybody should ask. Am I really an expert or at least good at something that somebody would pay for? You know, it's one thing to say, and I think a lot of people discount this aspect of that on-demand part of the gig economy. It's that work because they're in between stuff. You know, it's supplemental. I can't tell you how many because I always survey. How many Uber drivers are like teachers or masseuses or musicians? I mean, they're doing something else, and this is just another income stream. It is not their primary mode of employment or mode of income. So aside from the fact that, you know, you could hang out your shingle as a copywriter or an HR person or a marketing person or whatever, are you good enough to do that? Now, the beauty, quite frankly, of the on-demand world that it used to be when I started M Squared almost 30 years ago, if somebody wasn't good at what they were doing and they couldn't get gigs, they had to go back to regular employment. Right now, if somebody might not be so good at it, or maybe they're not good at the selling part, they're good at the skill part, but not selling their own services, they could drive for Uber in the meantime. I mean, there are other ways for them to earn money as they are building up their business. So that's kind of a plus. So that's the first question. Am I good at something good enough that I'm going to go out there? And then, of course, there's your risk profile, which is it will take some time to make it happen. So how do you feel about that? And, you know, there are ways that you can try to reduce that risk, go to current colleagues, former bosses, and say, I'm thinking about doing this. You know, would you hire me? Would you not? And I think there is a tremendous value in people really asking around, because, you know, you don't see yourself as others see you. So to find out what the secret sauce is that, you know, your boss liked about what you did is really important, because that can help you refine your service offering in the most positive way. So once you figure out your risk profile and you figure out that actually you're willing to go for it, then there are a lot of ways that you can sort of pursue it. But the final one is your social profile, which is, by definition, working independently, it can be lonely. So how do you feel about that? You know, for people who would work at home on occasion and then go back into the office, was that more energizing? And what would it be like to you? I mean, do you need the motivation of actually working in an office, or can you work at home, or are you going to make an investment in co-working space, and will you get your energy socially from that co-working space, recognizing that that has cost to it?
I think that's a great point. It's funny, for me, I've been with Regis, which is an executive suite that was the thing that was around before WeWork, where it provides the receptionist and all of that. And I'll never forget, about 9 years ago when I first opened my company, I was just little old me. I had a consulting practice and nobody else. And the camaraderie that was there, you know, so you weren't at home every day in the days you were in the office. There was just this sense of community that was wonderful between everybody who was in the office. And so it was kind of, for me, at least in my situation, it was a win-win, because I got private time to myself to be able to think and do my job. And then I got community time and social time with other people. So I think that there is something to be said if you're somebody who's overtly social, just maybe looking for an even more communicative, collaborative space like a WeWork, as opposed to a Regis, which is kind of an in-between that and working by yourself at home, I would say.
And, you know, there are lots of co-working models. There's a really cool one here in the Bay Area called the Hivery, which is just for women, although they can't discriminate, so they do have a male member or two. but there are lots of, and there's another one called Canopy, where, unlike a lot of the co-working space that are in, you know, the hip parts of town where all the tech companies are, or downtown, et cetera, they have located in the residential parts of the city, with the idea that, hey, boomers might not want to pay $30 for parking, so why not have it in a place where they can actually walk from Pacific Heights to their co-working space? So there are lots of models out there, which is the other thing that people should do, is check those out. And I am not a tax expert, so this should not be taken as tax advice, but my understanding is that, and I'm surprised that nobody who actually is a tax expert has blogged about this yet, is that now there is an advantage tax-wise to the co-working expense, because my understanding is that the expense for a home office is going away, or the amount that can be deducted for a home office is going away. But your business expense at a co-working space would still be a business expense. So seems to me that kind of makes the hard cost a little more palpable if it is something that can defray your taxes.
Yeah, and it's funny, that leads into one of the next questions I was going to ask you, which you just hit on, which is, how is the gig economy going to be impacted, or how is it already impacted by the current administration?
You know, hard to say. Again, I think that the dust has not settled a lot on the tax bill, so there still is more to come on that. The Secretary of Labor, Acosta, has said that he wants to normalize these employment law structures that have been around for so long and haven't really been updated. And so, you know, from my standpoint, I like the idea of the free flow of markets and labor and the idea that they are enabling more gig work to happen, I think is great. Now, some people look upon the fact that he's saying let's create a better legal environment for the gig economy. Some people, labor advocates, for example, look at that and say, oh, that's terrible because all workers need, you know, access to employer-provided health care. Again, I think you have to take a bigger look at it and think about this portable benefits notion. You know, quite frankly, there are entrepreneurs out there that are doing cool things because they're not waiting for the government to change. You know, one of the big problems that gig people have is they're working really hard, and then the money's coming in, and then because they've been working so hard, they haven't been selling, so there's a lull, so there's this lack of predictability about their income. So there's a fintech company in Dublin, Ireland, called Trezio, which is creating this structure where, using big data, it figures out your regular income, and it's varying level, and it comes up with what your average income should be, and it kind of pays you your average income. And any overage that you might have in a given period goes like into a savings account. Underages would come out of that. And if you exhaust that, you know, we kind of had the conversation of, so there's a real economic, you know, cliff. What happens then? They're still working that out. But it's an interesting idea of, if that's your biggest problem, let's figure out a way to make that work.
I love that. So can you repeat again for our listeners? Because I think you cut out there for a second. And so you said it's a company in Ireland, in Dublin. And did you say it was called Trezio? I don't want to get it wrong.
Trezio, T-R-E-Z-E-O.
T-R-E-Z-E-O.
And the unfortunate thing is they are piloting in England and Ireland. So they won't be here yet. But my guess is if it starts to work, and they've got some great technical minds as part of the company, you know, one of the guys who invented blockchain is part of this. So there are, I would bet on them, let's put it that way. You know, there are other people like that are trying to figure out how to do things smarter, because we can't wait for all the rules to change.
Yeah, I think that's brilliant. And like you said, I mean, I think that we're in an interesting time right now. We're at the precipice of, I mean, at what point do you think that gig jobs will outweigh normal jobs? Do you think we'll ever hit that point, or are we on our way there, and how far are we?
I think it's going to be a cyclical thing where people will work for a while, they'll get some experience, they'll go off on their own, do stuff, get more experience, maybe get wooed back to a company, leave there again. So it'll just be a regular series, a real portfolio career, if you will. In fact, back in the day at M Squared, I remember one of our favorite consultants decided to take a quote-unquote regular job, and I was like, Jim, I can't believe this. He goes, Marion, what's the big deal? It's just a two-year gig. So I think that will be it will be a different rhythm. And certainly it always surprises me when you hear about somebody who's been at one place for a long, long time, but there still are people that have been there. Quite frankly, our Secretary of State, Rex Tillerson, he went into Exxon, and that's the only place he ever worked until he ran the Secretary of State, the State Department. And so there still are some of those, but they're fewer and fewer and fewer. And I think for, you know, the millennial generation, that's not really going to happen.
So aside from that, aside from, you know, whether or not we're ever going to move to 50-50 gig versus regular employment or otherwise, what's the outlook for 2018 and going forward? Can you tell me, or is it optimistic? Does it look good? What should we be anticipating?
I think most people are optimistic. I think there is there are some people who have said that they think by 2020, 2 years, there will be a Fortune 500 company where the only employees will be the executive leadership team.
Wow.
Think about that. But again, that might mean that smaller companies are being outsourced and taking part of the functionality that might have been done by employees. I think the outlook is positive, but on virtually all fronts. The there are challenges, of course, but there are challenges with the way that traditional work happens. I mean, there are the marriage of technology and innovation and expertise is pretty powerful. For example, there's one company called SheWorks, WORKS, I believe, that it's an Argentinian entrepreneur, and her husband is a Russian entrepreneur who has a technology platform that enables people, clients, to see the desktop of the worker. So, you know, you could be a worker in the Ukraine, and the client in Silicon Valley could see what you are keying, and you can, I mean, a little Big Brother-ish, but you can also, you know, turn it off because you're having lunch or whatever you're doing. Well, SheWorks is trying to empower women around the world, and so they did a deal with Google AdWords and Cisco certifications to certify women in Saudi Arabia to be able to do gigs on AdWords and Cisco. And these are women who, by custom, would not be able to work in an office. But now, using the transparent business platform, where, you know, somebody can see what they're doing on Google AdWords, these women can actually get work. So there are incredibly empowering dimensions to what we're seeing.
That is extraordinary. That it's just amazing what we're seeing technologically and how liberating it is for everybody around the world just to be able to collaborate. We've really become a global society, and I think your example of SheWorks just proves that all the more. So on that note, I think you've given our listeners so many things to think about today, Marianne. Are there any things that you would love, salient points that maybe we didn't touch on, or things that you think are so important, 2 to 3 things maybe, that you would love to leave the listeners with today?
Well, you know, I think one of the biggest misconceptions is the notion that people who are working this way are doing it because they can't find regular jobs. And I think that sort of is dismissive of this as a career choice. And quite frankly, depending on what report you read, it's either 40 million or upwards of 50 million people in America who are working independently. And 70% of them have chosen to do this. More than 50% have said they wouldn't go back to regular work no matter how much they were paid. Hmm. So I think there needs to be a better societal recognition of the professionalism and integrity of that choice. And quite frankly, for the future of, you know, corporations who deploy this, you know, the idea of high-performance teams require, according to the most recent research, that there be psychological safety in the team, that you feel part of the team and you can say whatever you want and you're accepted and trusted. Well, you got to make sure that person is not viewed as, you're just, you know, somebody who couldn't get a job here, but luckily you got a contract here. That's not going to cut it. That's not going to make a high-performance team work if that's the viewpoint. So we really need to acknowledge that there are a lot of rock stars out there that are working independently. And let's harness the talent for the good of all.
Brilliant. I couldn't agree more. And again, we see that sometimes in temporary workers, a little bit different than consulting, but some people do it by choice and they get more flexibility, time with their family and what they need. And I think it's important, like you said, to embrace that people have the opportunity to choose what sort of work they want to do, whether it's regular employment or gig work, and to realize that there's equal talent on both sides of the fence. So I think that's a great note to leave things on today. And I would love to make sure that our listeners know where to find information about you, or in case they want to purchase your book, where would be some of the best places for people to find information about you?
MarianneMcGovern.com. They can also connect with me on LinkedIn.
Okay, terrific.
And of course, Amazon.
Okay, wonderful. And again, to repeat the name of your book, it is Thriving in the Gig Economy. And today we've had with us on the show Marianne McGovern, Marianne spelled M-A-R-I-A-N-N-E. ION, in case you want to go ahead and Google her and find a copy of her book. And thank you so much for joining us today, Marion. If you missed any portion of today's show, we do invite you to go to the archive section of the LA Talk Radio website, where you can find the show immediately available for download following the show. And later in the week, the show will also be available on iTunes for download. So you can find us on iTunes under Get Yourself the Job on iTunes and leave us any comments or feedback or rate us over there. We always appreciate any feedback that you might have, as well as interacting with us on our Facebook Get Yourself the Job page there. So thank you again for joining us today, Marion. It's been a pleasure, and look forward to having you tune in next week, Monday at 4 p.m.
My pleasure, although maybe it should have been Get Yourself the Job.
You're listening to Get Yourself the Job with Jennifer Hill, only on LA Talk Radio.